it can ignite. And all you gotta do is bring the light. Cause a new light shine, cause a new light shine. Time to get on up, say tradition. Shalom y'all, Eliana here. Before we jump into this week's episode, I just want to share that it's another one of our live episodes. This one was recorded this past summer at New Cage. New Cage's mission is to connect, inspire, and affirm all Jewish educators to build a stronger Jewish community. It's a pluralistic organization for Jewish educators of any age, from anywhere, doing any sort of education. Its flagship program is a conference over the summer. We've had it online the past few years, but I, for one, am so excited to be back in person. But they also do learning throughout the year. If you're a Jewish educator, I highly, highly recommend that you check them out. I have also had the privilege of being the director of LEAP, the Leadership for Emerging Education Professionals Fellowship Program, for the past few years, which is for educators in their first 5 years of doing this as their job. Happy to talk to you with my LEAP hat on. If that is something that you're interested in, please let us know. It was such a delight to record this at New Cage. You'll hear us responding to people in the chat. The live episodes on Zoom are so fun because we get to really engage with people and bring their voices into the podcast. We're hoping to do more of these in the future, both through the Light Lab and with partnering organizations. If you'd like to bring us in to do a live podcast recording, either over Zoom or in person, let us know. You can now email us at podcast@lightlab.co. That's podcast@lightlab.co. And now we take you to this week's very special episode. Shalom, everyone. Welcome back to the Light Lab podcast. My name is Eliana Light, and I'm so thrilled to be here with my dear friend, Cantor Ellen Dreskin.
A pleasure to be with you again, Eliana.
So great to be with you. Our first two-person captaining of the podcast. We send lots of love and joy to Josh at home, and we hope you do too as well, listeners. And as per usual, we like to start with a question. So Ellen, here's today's question. What's a piece of Torah that you've learned recently that you're still thinking about?
There's a piece of Torah, actually, when I knew this was going to be the question, that I've actually just started thinking about. Being a cantor by ordination and profession, my attention is already going toward the High Holy Days. And I've always loved this idea of Rosh Hashanah being the beginning of the year, Shana. And I also love the Hebrew idea that Shana is the same Hebrew root as the word for change. And Rosh being my head. So the new year helps me to develop a head for change. And very recently, it's been called to my attention that don't we also know that Shana also has to do with repetition and repeating something like Vishinantam, or doing something probably from Shnaim, from doing things twice. But I love it, this whole idea that we make things new by trying them over and over and over again and learning from them every single time. And this is how change happens. And so it's all swirling about in my head as we head into the season. Maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit. We're heading into it.
Never. Friends, I'm not sure when this will air, but we're recording this in July, which is certainly an appropriate time to begin thinking about the high holidays as a Jewish professional, if not earlier. I love that. I'm going to be taking that Shana Torah with me as well. Of course, as often happens, I wrote the question down and then sat in the chair and was like, wait a second. I don't have an answer, but here's the Torah that I looked into last night. There have been images coming out yesterday and today from the James Webb Space Telescope. I'm not sure if you've seen those pictures, but if you Google James Webb Space Telescope, they will probably come out. And the picture that was unveiled yesterday, it's really incredible.
It's a picture that takes us back 13 billion years to some of the earliest galaxies that were created, that exist in the universe. And they were saying in the article that if you imagine putting a grain of sand on your finger and then stretching your arm out as far as it can go, that little grain of sand is the minuscule piece of the universe that this photo captured, even though there are galaxies upon galaxies in the photo. It was almost too much to stand. Really incredible. And then I wanted some sort of way to respond, because we have just learned and seen something new about our universe. And so, of course, I went to Safaria and searched stars. Like, what do we have for stars besides the stars of the sky and sands of the sea thing? So I found Psalm 8. I'm just going to read lines 4 through 6 in the English. When I behold your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars that you set in place, what are humankind that you have been mindful of them? Human beings that you have taken note of them, that you have made them little less than divine and adored them with glory and majesty. And those lines really spoke to me, even though I think the true Torah was the picture itself, how human know-how has allowed us a glimpse into the deepest and most wondrous universe that we have. That's kind of where my mind is today. We'll put those pictures in the show notes if you haven't been able to see them yet. And you can think for yourself, what journey do they take you on? We're thinking about Torah today because Ellen and I are not the only ones in the Zoom room. In fact, we are live at the Summer of New Cage. Everybody wave. I love doing that. It's a podcast. No one can see you wave, but we can feel your energy with us. I've been involved in New Cage for the past 11 years, which shocks me, honestly, that I could have been doing anything for 11 years. And yet New Cage means so much to me. It's the place where I performed my Jewish music for an audience for the first time, a place where I taught other teachers for the first time. And I love getting to learn from all the folks at New Cage, including Ellen, who I've taken her sessions at New Cage in person before. But in honor of being here at a place for education, we decided today to explore the blessing for studying Torah. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means anyway. But Ellen, why don't you just help us dive in to the Hebrew of this bracha that we'll be exploring today?
Happy to do so. I'll read it first slowly in Hebrew and then present one of many, many translations out there for the prayer. Begins like this. Baruch ata Adonai, Eloheinu melech ha'olam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. The translation that I have is from Kol HaNeshama, the Reconstructionist. This happens to be the daily Siddur, and it's translated like this. Blessed are you, the one of Sinai, our God, the sovereign of all worlds, who made us holy with your mitzvot and commanded us to occupy ourselves with words of Torah.
Wow. I want to just jump in about two things I noticed in that English before I forget. I love how the Kol HaNeshama Siddur puts a different name for the Holy One, a nickname for Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and the place where Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh usually appears. Can you say it again? Something, something, Sinai.
Yes, in this instance, it's blessed are you, the one, with a capital O, of Sinai. That idea that gives you the little hint of here's the face or the facet of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh that we think this blessing is pointing towards somehow.
Absolutely beautiful. It brings us back to a place of revelation, not only having happened, we might say, on Shavuot, but a constant revelation that is happening all the time. I also, because I was thinking about these galaxies and these photos from the telescope, Lord of all worlds or God of all worlds? Was that the phrasing for Melech HaOlam there?
Yes, this is sovereign of all worlds. And we don't often hear, I grew up with, you know, ruler of the universe or of the world. And I like when I look in a siddur and I see that worlds is plural, that olam is beyond one dimension in some way. And whether it's source or sovereign, it's a great phrase.
It really is. Olam being both infinity in space and in time. So it could be that saying all worlds is the world of space and the world of time. Or of course, now that I'm thinking about all the billions of galaxies that are out there in the universe, that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is part of all of those as well, not just the one that we're on. Let's talk about those last three words, La'asok B'divrei Torah, and then maybe that can give us a clue into what the blessing formula is helping us do here. So Torah, what is it? Ellen, you made a face.
I guess I realized that even though we're on video, I always forget that the podcast is not on video, and the sound that went with my face I just made was like, oh, it's like Torah. We really are diving in here. I know that we all think of Torah as the scroll in the Aron. And I am intrigued with the fact that Hebrew doesn't normally have capital letters, uppercase letters, and lowercase letters. And that there is Torah with a capital T, which I think of as the scroll in the Aron. And there is Torah with a small t that really I understand as meaning general instruction and learning. Hebraically, it shares a root with moreh or morah, the words that we certainly know at New Cage. These are the words for teachers, morim. And that reminds us also of the word for parents, which is horim. And they all come from that root of Torah. So I love this idea that it's broader even than the scroll in the ark when we say Torah.
Absolutely. Our friends in the My People's Prayer Book series, which I am holding up, the yellow one for Birkot HaShachar and the morning blessings, we'll get into a little later why this blessing over Torah is in the book for the morning blessings, Birkot HaShachar, reminded us that the Torah, besides for the last book, Dvarim, Deuteronomy, the Torah doesn't really have a concept of itself. It doesn't talk about learning Torah or studying Torah. And yet by the time we get to Deuteronomy, there's a sense of keep these words on your heart. These words are yours. These words are not in heaven. They are yours. There's an idea that what is happening, the words of Torah are something for each of us to have. The idea that Torah is instruction at its root and can balloon to encompass all of these different facets is really powerful. Where the blessing comes from in the Talmud Brachot 11b, the rabbis are having a back and forth over when it's appropriate to say a blessing like this. Is it just over Torah? What if you're learning Midrash? What if you're learning Mishnah? If we say Asher Kitchanu b'mitzvotav etzivanu, if we use that phrase that we'll get to at the end, we'll see if this going backwards thing worked at all, then that is a commandment or an imperative that comes from the Torah itself, deoraita. So how can there be a deoraita commandment from the Torah to study Torah if we take Torah in this broader sense?
I think of Torah as so much of our stories. Like you say, it's not, while it does say these particular words and these particular things you're supposed to do, that it's the stories of our lives. And I love this idea that you're opening up for me, that just by engaging with the stories of these people's lives, there's such wisdom there for us, life experience. Enormous challenges, enormous celebration, etc. And it is learning for us over and over and over again.
Absolutely. And since we're working backwards, to notice that it doesn't just say Torah, it says Divrei Torah, from this word davar. Diber is to speak, something about spoken, something about words. And also Divrei Torah could just be things of Torah, the stuff of Torah. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that, Ellen.
Well, it's yeah, the matter that it's not, it goes back a little bit to what you said, if it's not in heaven, it's not that these big lofty concepts and ideas that are so far away. It's the matter, the atoms, the light from 13 billion years ago of everyday stuff. So that amazes me. I find that fascinating. And the idea that words make things real Jewishly and in life, words form a lot of reality. And I think that we're reminded of that in this prayer as well, in this blessing.
Words create worlds, 100%. And I'm also, again, taking those words out of context. If you're at a service or a meeting or something, a tish maybe, where people gather and sing around a table, if you give a little teaching, that's a Dvar Torah. That's a Torah thing or a word of Torah. And those can happen in all sorts of different places and spaces, but it's not just the Torah itself as words on the page. It is the interplay between you and the Torah. And it is also whoever is giving the Dvar Torah is then injecting themselves into it as well. Because if you're listening to someone give a Dvar Torah, you're not just receiving the Torah, you're receiving this teacher's Torah. You're learning from them, from their own interpretation, from the parts they decided to talk about and the parts they left out, from their speaking style, from everything that happened to them in their life. And I don't know if I've ever thought about a Dvar Torah like that before. I think reading this bracha is allowing me to go a little deeper into that.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that it doesn't have to be just the scholars and the teachers, the words that we speak to each other, these are also words of Torah. And the idea that our interpretation and the way we bring these words into our heart is, we've all got our own Torah. Each of us writes our own Torah as we go. And ain't there a lot of learning in that?
Amen. Amen. So why la'asok as the active verb here? I have to say that, of course, when I hear la'asok, I think of the English word soak and what it means to soak up words of Torah or be soaked in words of Torah. Ellen, you're our grammar queen. What do you think of la'asok?
I thought you were actually going to say you're our grandma queen.
No.
I must say that I celebrated a significant senior birthday just last week.
Oh, happy
and so maybe I'm feeling the elderly role a little bit, because when you say to someone of my generation about soak, the first thing that comes up is a Palmolive dish liquid commercial where Madge, the manicurist, is talking with her client about the new Palmolive dishwasher. And she said, oh, does it really keep your hands soft? She says, yes, you're soaking in it. And that was the whole thing, was to be soaking in this dishwasher liquid. So that's the soak reference. But it's so funny because we both said, you know, today we're spending time talking about the blessing for studying Torah. And yet many of us might know that the word for study, to study, is lilmod. And the blessing doesn't say lilmod et divrei Torah. It says la'asok. And I love the word asok because my esek is my business. If I'm asuka, I'm busy. And so to me, the translation that I read earlier says to occupy ourselves with words of Torah. I love to get busy with, and I love to think about the idea. It's appearing in the chat box. Thank you for engaging with. And what does it mean when we make it our business? Say we're starting a business, you know, there's some sort of investment involved. Perhaps hopefully there's some sort of vision involved And even a product or a service which a business provides. I'm going to ask a question in the chat box while we continue to chat, is what product or service is the business of Torah engaging us in? I'm curious about the kinds of things that that we might be producing from our getting busy or making Torah our business. When we are in business with someone, there's the collaboration, there's the partnership, there's the chevruta, the sharing of ideas, that it this is so much more than study. And I just love that, to soak in Torah and to busy ourselves with others, to invest ourselves in it, and to walk away with a service or product or producing something that will be of ultimate use to other people. So all of this in this one word. Perhaps you didn't mean for me to go on that long about it, Eliana, but I just couldn't help myself.
Of course I meant for you to go on as long as you want about everything. That's why that's why we're doing this as a podcast. I wanted to mention something I don't think I've thought of before, which is why I love doing this with you, is that to make it your business is not just about creating something or having a business as what as we might think about it today. It also means that it's yours to think about and engage with and question and wrestle with. If someone wants a piece of gossip from me, I might say, that's not really our business, right? None of your business, I might say to someone. But to make Torah our business means that it's ours too. It is our business. It's our responsibility, and it's ours to talk about, and it's ours to explore. No matter who you are, I would say, no matter how much experience you might have with traditional Torah study or Chevruta partnered learning, or what, how much Hebrew you know, none of that matters. The Torah is your business. Nobody is going to say none of your business when it comes to Torah. Or if they do, then those aren't the kinds of teachers that we want to be exploring with. What does it mean to make Torah your business?
There you go. In the chat window, minding your own business takes on a whole new dimension here.
Right. This is my business.
Don't tell me this is none of my business.
I love this. Evelyn saying being present, making the space. That's what the business of Torah does for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And thank you, Jerry. Torah as a friend, something familiar and different every time we look at it. Every time.
That's beautiful. And yeah, thank you, Lily. If Torah is your business, then it becomes something close to you that you're also involved in.
Mm-hmm. It requires relationship.
Right.
It requires active relationship.
Mm-hmm. Which is why we keep coming back to it year after year. Torah itself in the Parsha cycle, in the cycle of reading the same bits of Torah every year, and also Torah in a more broad sense, the stories that we tell, Midrash and Talmud and all of the pieces of the Jewish canon, because we are actively a part of that conversation today. The conversation hasn't stopped. It's still going with us. It is certainly our business. I love that.
Do we want to talk a little bit about exactly when we say such a blessing? Are we ready
sure.
to go there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because it occurs in Shacharit. It's right toward the very beginning of our morning blessings. So it seems like a wonderful way to start off the day. And I find that it has this activity to it, to engage in Divrei Torah. And yet each time, if I were to study at 9 a.m. and then I was going to study again at noon, and then we decided to do the blessing before, do a little blessing before we recorded a podcast in the afternoon, which is also Divrei Torah, that we don't say the blessing over and over again. I think it doesn't appear in Mincha, it doesn't appear in Mariv, just Shacharit, just our morning service, as if to say, We've hardly been at this as a community for 5 minutes this morning, and we're saying this blessing, and it's good until tomorrow morning when we'll get together and say it again, as if everything that I do or say or hear or digest for the rest of the day has the potential to be a Dvar Torah. And can I keep this blessing with me throughout the day? Or can I keep the idea that I don't have to say it every time, but maybe I can still recognize so many moments during the day as Dvarei Torah?
I love that. I absolutely love that. It goes along with what I love about especially the morning service, but really all of the liturgy that we've been handed down. It's inviting us to move through life with a particular set of glasses on or a particular mindset. And this is saying, what would your day be like if you walked through it with a Torah mindset, looking out for what you could learn and how you can be an embodiment of Torah? I also think it's interesting that in the Siddur, right after this blessing, there is usually a piece from Torah and a piece from the rest of Tanakh, from a different part of the Bible, the Jewish Bible, and a piece from the Mishnah, as to even say in the Siddur, and don't think that by Torah, we really just mean Torah. We mean all of these things. We mean all the Jewish canon and more and more and more. It was really cool to look at the My People's Prayer Book on this, because there are kind of three versions of the Torah blessing that we find here. First, we find the blessing that we're talking about, which in Brachot 11b, it says, comes from Rav Yehuda. But then Rav Yochanan adds a bit that starts in the Hebrew, Vaha Erev Na, and I want to read it in Hebrew and English for us. Vaha Erev Na, Adonai Eloheinu, Yodhei Vavhei Eloheinu, I'm never sure how to pronounce that, Et Divrei Toratcha Befinu, Uvefi Amcha Be'Israel, V'nehiya Anachnu V'tzatzeinu, V'tzatze Amcha Be'Israel, Kulano Yodei Shemecha V'lomdei Toratecha Lishma, Baruch Ata Adonai HaMelamed Torah LeEmo Yisrael. And this is it in English. So Adonai, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet to us and to the house of Israel, your people, that we and our descendants and the descendants of your people, the house of Israel, that we all should know your name and study your Torah for its own sake. Lishma, which is a concept some of us might be familiar with. Torah Lishma, what does it mean to learn something for its own sake? Blessed are you, Adonai, who teaches Torah to your people Israel. So in the first blessing, we are engaging with words of Torah. We're getting busy with it. Now, in this blessing from Rav Yochanan, we imagine the relationship with the Holy One as teacher to student, which is still a relationship. And then there's another one. Rav Hamnuna adds these lines, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam, Asher Bachar Banu Mikol HaAmim, Benatan Lanu Et Torato, Baruch Ata Adonai Notein HaTorah, which might sound familiar as the blessing that is said before reading an Aliyah of Torah, when the Torah is read in a prayer service. And this means, blessed are you, Adonai, our God, ruler of the world, who chose us from all peoples and gave us God's Torah. Blessed are you, Adonai, who gives the Torah. And this is another mode of reception. This is almost like passive reception. So there's engaging with, there's a teacher-student relationship, and then there's just the passive reception of Torah. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on any of that that I just rolled out there.
I'm still looking in the reconstruction of Siddur and listening to the translation that you shared. And we mentioned earlier about in terms of La'asok B'divrei Torah, that this Siddur called Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, the one of Sinai. Just to note that what were the first words of your English of Vaha Erev Na, Sweeten?
Yes. So Adonai, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet to us.
So this one says, transmit to us, wise one, our God. And then the Chatima about HaMelamed Torah LeEmo Yisrael, who teaches Torah to your people Israel, says, blessed are you, the sage, who teaches Torah to your people Israel. So again, different facets of God. It I noticed that the missing word is divrei now. And so I wonder if our, and also for the prayer that is now associated with the Aliyah to Torah is seems to be specializing in the scroll in the Ark, in the five books, perhaps. And this idea that, you know, we it starts with us. There's this Kabbalistic idea that the shimmering starts from below and it awakens the shimmering on high. That first we open our hearts, we engage, we say we're going to get busy with Torah. And then we have the opportunity to learn. You know, a teacher can teach and teach and teach forever. It's the student's open ears or heart or eyes that completes the connection so that we can call it learning. And I like this idea of this transmission that right here, it's a little bit of Ve'ahavta here, even also from generation to generation of sharing these words with our children and the generations to come. So all these different ways of looking at it and sharing it.
I love that. And Lily reminds us in the chat that there's, as you said, Ellen, big T Torah and little T Torah, and how this prayer, which if you read the Talmud piece, it's really great. The Gemara concludes, let's say all of them. Like each of these rabbis was like, well, here's how I might bless my engagement with Torah. And where I was like, let's do it all, because there are so many different ways and facets to engage, where one of them, Divrei Torah, does feel broader. And then this idea of making Torah sweet and learning Torah lishma, making it personalized, making it something that each person can be, that each person can find meaning in, I would say. And then the third one, which is really drilling down into the relationship between the Jewish people and the Torah, which is unique among everyone, even though, of course, I would like to think that when we engage in these Divrei Torah with integrity, that it does allow us to be a light among the nations and help us lead our lives with more integrity. So no, Joe, you can't have too many blessings. Of course, we're going to put them all in. It's great. But it's also interesting to note that it is La'asok B'Divrei Torah that has become the blessing for studying Torah, even outside of a prayer context. I know many places who, before they engage in chavruta or partnered study or at the beginning of a lecture, will say this blessing. So let's explore it as we kind of work our way backwards. As a bracha, what is this blessing inviting us to do? My own translation of the blessing formula here would be, we experience your blessing, Holy One of all time and space, in this opportunity to become aware of holiness. Asher kitshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. It's that mitzvotav v'tzivanu, which traditionally might be translated as with your commandments and commanded us, and that issue of commandedness that can get so sticky. Do you have any thoughts on commandedness, Ellen, or anybody else who would like to type them in the chat?
Nah, I don't really have any thoughts about it. This idea of commandedness, and I have to back up even one more word, Eliana, if that's okay. I mean, to upset the backwards apple cart just a little bit, but to go one word earlier, and what is it about doing mitzvot and being commanded that has to do with kidshanu, with this root of kadosh, of being sacred or holy, and that anu, that first person plural suffix, that we are somehow kadoshed by doing these mitzvot. And an interpretive translation of mitzvot might not be commanded or commandments, but opportunities, chances. And then in Arabic, I believe, the connotation of the same root of mitzvot has to do not so much with commandedness, but with connection. So the idea and of mitzvot being something that we share as a people, And that feeling I know of when I light Shabbat candles or when I study Torah, the idea that people all over the world are doing this, and I feel a connection to them over time. For generations of my own family, these acts have been done and these blessings have been said. So these mitzvot connect me in time and space to the olamim, to the different worlds, right? And there's also, I realize when I say asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav, I always want to be curious about how can this action I'm about to perform awaken me, elevate me, make me more intentional, take me off autopilot. For me, these are all implications for me of that one word, kidshanu, is that's what I'm going for. Why did you command me to do this? Let's talk about that.
I love it so much. I love the idea of mitzvot as a connecting point. We say this version of the blessing formula really only for rituals that we are doing that can be traced in one form or another, sometimes with stretching and sometimes without stretching, to Torah. And when we trace it all the way back and when we envision not just those around us, but those before us and those after us, it invites us into that world. And that's really what I think blessings are or can be. And we get to talk about this every time a blessing comes up on the show, and there are plenty more where that came from. But that the bracha itself is inviting us to focus on something, either to focus on a time period, like Shabbat or a holiday does, or to focus on an action, like lighting candles does, or to focus on something we are about to learn or do, like this blessing does, and to say, if you put a parenthesis, if you put a bracket around it, and actually really only focus on this little piece, it has the power to be transformative. It has the power to be elevated. This moment or this thing that you're doing has the power to become elevated and holy, but only if you choose to make it so, right? Only if you actually, as you said, Ellen, do the elevating, because it's very easy to say a blessing with no intention. I mean, you know, when I was a kid and I was learning the brachot over food, I really used to think like these are just words that we have to say before we eat because God wants us to say these words. And if we don't say the magic words, then I don't know, bad stuff will happen. But it's not, it's an invitation into a particular way of being whereby we are noticing and naming what we are doing as having holy potential in us and in the world.
Mm-hmm. Use the magic word of magic. You know, that this is not a magic formula, abracadabra aside, but this is an intention. What you just said, it has the potential. And I'm the one who flips that switch to awaken the potential of that moment and the possible significance of my making a habit of performing this act, of looking at learning in this sacred way and in trying to be awake to it. And this is one of the ways that you and I have talked about so many times, Eliana, that saying these prayers and being intentional about them with regularity shapes, it forms, it's part of our story, and we make it part of how we interact with the world, hopefully in a positive way.
I think so. And by making it a habit, we're also, to go back to what we said at the beginning of all this, we're also making it our business, right? This is my business to learn and to explore and to react and respond and engage and soak up whatever it might be, Torah. That's my business. So what might it look like to not just to say or to have this bracha at the beginning of the day in the morning liturgy, to set us on a path, but I'm thinking for myself as someone who is not always the most focused and can be very easily distracted. What are the moments in my life, either when I'm talking to someone or when I'm turning on an online class or when I'm listening to someone give a lecture, whatever it might be, where I make the choice to say this bracha and say, I want to learn. I want to open myself to the opportunity that now is a moment where Torah is taking place. And because Torah is my business, I'm going to make it my business to be present and be here. Could that do something for me? What might that look like? I'm going to give that a try.
It's a mindfulness technique, certainly. I think that in a previous podcast, I told the story that Noah Ben Shay tells about knots in the string of pearls, that the blessings that we say are knots in between valuable pearls on a string, so they don't all just slosh together. But a blessing helps us set a moment aside and focus our intention to really shine a very specific light and draw our attention there.
100%. And I don't want to gloss over what Lily has put in the chat, which is that to say Torah is my business as to women in this field can feel radical. I would say that I'm always inspired at Svara, the Queer Talmud Academy. Anyone who is of a marginalized group, or really any individual person, that's what we said at the beginning. The Torah is your business. It doesn't matter how much Hebrew you know. It doesn't matter how much experience you have. It doesn't matter if you were born Jewish or came to it later in life. It doesn't matter what your relationship to Torah is right now. The Torah is your business too. And that, really, Lily, thank you for calling out the power of that, because it does feel really powerful. Listener, you can say that and see how it feels. The Torah is my business. The Torah is my business, and it's also your business. And with that, we'll be right back.
Welcome back, everybody, from this short break. As you know, from time to time, we love to look at the melodies that composers have chosen to interpret these words for the various prayers and blessings that we talk about on the podcast. And today is no different. I think that for this blessing, this La'asot B'divrei Torah, something that I find very powerful, actually, is the chanting of the trope, like an aliyah trope for this blessing, the barakada, da 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 da. For me, something about that touches my heart because it's ancient and these words are ancient. So it does something for me. I think that one of the more well-known melodies, contemporary melodies for this prayer, come to us from Jeff Klepper and Danny Friedlander, also known as Kol B'Seder. They have a beautiful melody for this with guitar, folk. It also probably served, as many of the contemporary melodies do, to bring these words of blessing alive in the Jewish summer camps. And since we're recording this, as we mentioned earlier, in July, here's a tribute to summer camp and to Jeff and Danny's rendition of these words. What other melodies do we have? Eliana, what do you got?
I really love Dan Nichols' version of this blessing, which is also called Sweet as Honey, as that is the English chorus, sweet as honey, sweet as honey, sweet as honey on our tongue. We can play a little bit of that here. What I love, now that we've looked a little closer at the liturgical context of this, is v'ha'arevna, that idea that we are asking Torah to be sweet to us. I also remember, though of course I don't know if I actually remember or if I remember telling the story of my first day of first grade at Born Bloom Solomon Schechter Day School, which is now just Born Bloom Community School, I'm not exactly sure what they call it in Memphis, Tennessee, where we made letters in chocolate molds to show that that Hebrew is sweet, the Torah is sweet. There's also a tradition that I remember seeing. Maybe I can link to this too. I grew up with this VHS tape of the story of Rashi. Have I brought this up before? I might have. Rashi, colon, A Light in the Dark Ages, and it's narrated by Leonard Nimoy. And it's one of those like really old, cheap animations where it's just one thing and another thing, and it goes back and forth for a while. Anyway.
This must go in the program. You must put this in the program notes, this link, if you can find
100%, 100%. And there's a part of the movie where they put some honey on a scroll of Torah, and the little boy gets to taste some that it's sweet.
I have read in many places that that is indeed a tradition. We're hearing in the chat box here, David Rothberg has a melody to this blessing called Soak 'em Up. When you're talking about Dan Nichols' melody, I was thinking the English, let us soak it up, let it all sink in, sweet words of Torah. So this idea of soaking is making it, it's expanding. And we also have notes in the, we can put this in the program notes, we can find these links. Abby Strauss has a melody to it. Rick Reck too, very possibly. I also wanna add to that list, a rabbi educator in Florida, Rabbi David Paskin, has a melody to this blessing. You can find it that at oysongs.com. And what I find interesting about David Paskin's melody is he adds a phrase in the blessing, Hafoch ba the hafoch ba, which is a turn it and turn it, so that bringing back this idea in the blessing itself, that each time we look at it, because this is a daily blessing, each time we look at it and each time we go into situations where we think we know what's gonna happen already and we've decided how something is gonna be because we studied it before, we've been there before, we close the door on learning. Because we think we already know. And so I love this idea of always trying, and it just makes things more fun and more interesting. If we're always trying to look at something from a different angle than we've always looked at it and fling open those doors to just new discovery and new perspectives. Perhaps I'm feeling the lack of that in today's world, who knows, but go figure.
Perhaps, and with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. So grateful to be with you as we take a minute at the end of our episode to soak up a little Torah for ourselves. So I invite you, if you are in a place where this is possible, sit up a little more engaged in your seat. Feel your connection to the ground through your feet or through your seat. I invite you to roll your shoulders back, put your palms face down or face up on your lap. Imagine that your spine is a ladder reaching to heaven and earth. I invite you to soften your face, to unclench your jaw. Bring your shoulders down from your ears. And I invite you to just take a few deep breaths in and out, in through your nose and out through your mouth. Breathing in to lift and breathing out to ground. Breathing in to lift and breathing out to ground. I invite you to imagine a golden and shimmering letter Aleph. What does that look like? What does that feel like as you invite it into your psyche? A golden and shimmering letter Aleph. It's dancing, it's playful, it's present, it sparks, and it spins and it twirls. This sound before sound, this potential, this language, this Torah. I invite you to imagine that this Aleph, this golden shimmering Aleph, is now playfully moving and dancing right at the top of your head, right where your head meets the air. And all of a sudden, you can feel as if some of this olive is being poured into you. You feel that golden dancing shimmering light on your scalp, and you feel it start to fill up the top of your head. This golden shimmering playful light coming down the sides of your face, feeling it on your nose, on your eyelids, on your mouth, and on your tongue. What does it taste like? Feeling this golden shimmery light on your ears, feeling it in and around your neck, down your shoulders. Dripping or spreading or sparkling, however you imagine it. Down past your elbows, into your hands, around and into each finger, glowing with this beautiful light. Up through your chest and your torso, into your heart. Imagine your heart full of the sparkling, playful light. Down through your belly. Down through your back and through your front. Down each leg, each thigh, and knee, and calf, and toe. All of the light of this Torah, all of the golden light that is contained within this olive, now within you. As you breathe, can you feel yourself filled up with that light, with that golden sparkle? Can you feel that olive that is still playfully dancing around the top of your head, that has not lost any of its own light while it has poured into you? Take another deep breath and soak up all of that Torah. And plant a little bit of that golden light into your heart. You can imagine all of it kind of condensing into a little marble and going back into your heart. The Torah is yours. That golden light is always there. No matter who you are. Take a deep breath in, and I invite you to bring gratitude into your body for this Torah and for everyone, past, present, and future, that you get to share it with. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes and come back to join us, knowing that the light of Torah is there for you whenever you want it. Wow. Thank you so much to our friends at New Cage for giving us the space to do this live taping and for joining us today. Listeners, if you'd like to come to a live taping or organize one for your community, let us know. It really is the most fun. And of course, thank you so much, Ellen, for being with me today.
Always a pleasure, Eliana. Can't wait to learn more.
Thank you so much to Christy Dodge for editing. Our theme music is A New Light by me. You can find all of the things that we've talked about in our show notes. Please like us on Facebook and Instagram. Follow along. Share the podcast with anyone who would like some playful, golden, sparkly light of Torah in their life. And we will see you very soon.